Hi, Newstalk's Ciara Kelly here. There is something about summer that makes you want to refresh your home. And for many of us, that starts with the kitchen. It's where the morning coffee happens, where family life gathers, where friends always seem to end up. And after years of wear and tear, it might be time to give it the attention it deserves. So if you're thinking about a new kitchen, Tile Style is well worth a visit, because Tile Style doesn't just do tiles, they also design and supply beautiful kitchens, including the luxurious Porcelainosa kitchen collection. Think high quality, contemporary design, stunning finishes, clever storage, and a look that can completely transform your space. Their expert team can help you plan it all properly with advice and optional virtual design, so you can see how your new kitchen will come together before making any big decisions. And with Tile Style Summer Sale now on, offering exceptional value across the store, it's a brilliant time to start planning with tiles and finishes to perfectly complement your new kitchen. So if your summer plans include creating a kitchen that feels genuine special, start with Tile Style. Visit the Tile Style showroom in Ballymount to see full kitchen displays and finishes up close, or explore more at tilestyle.ie.
Moncrief on News Talk.
It's time for parenting. Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Good afternoon, Joanna.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Your first question is this. We have recently started potty training our three-year-old boy. He pulled down his pants and underwear to show his minder in the creche. He didn't have a nappy on his first day back after starting potty training. This was in the room with a few kids around. He sometimes comes along to the bathroom with me or his dad when we say we're going, or he'd push open the door and come in for a chat if we're already in there. We can sometimes struggle stopping him from following any visitors in the house when they go to the bathroom. Also, when myself or his dad are in the shower, he's in the bathroom for a quick chat and then he heads away again. He has come into the bedroom a few times recently when I'm changing and has seen me with my bra off. Now, he's very interested in his own nipples and in his 18-month-old sisters when they are sometimes in the bath at the same time. We're just wondering how to have a chat about bodies, private parts, privacy, consent, and what is the best way to deliver it. What are the best age-appropriate books to use? Lots of different advice around, and we want to avoid any shaming or embarrassment for him. He's a curious little boy, and we won't be able to teach him in the right way.
He sounds like a dote. He's very curious in general and a chatty little guy. So, you know, he's going in everywhere for chats that he can. So a lot of this, Sean, I'm kind of going, okay. You know that he's sharing, oh, I don't have a nappy. Let me show you I don't have a nappy. Very normal for a three-year-old to do that. You know, and kind of heading into the shower and commenting on bodies, and is my body the same or different to yours? And what about my sister's? All of that speaks to the natural innate curiosity of a child this age. And bodies are fascinating. You know, I think as adults, we get very self-conscious and shame-based about our bodies, but children are just enthralled by them. They find that fascinating. So at his age, I would say this is all very normal. Now, the best teacher of body boundaries and the best way to teach body boundaries is person to person, parents talking about it at home. Private parts are private. You know, it's different within families. We don't show people outside of our family our private parts. And you want to do a little bit of nuance on that, because I have had situations where a really good body boundaries talk happened, but children can be quite literal. So when the doctor needed to do an examination, it was like, no, private parts are private. So we want to just keep all of that a little bit fluid. Don't overwhelm him at 3 years old, but just begin the narrative, which I think is what this letter is about. We don't show other people our private parts, and private parts are private. Keep that as your kind of mantra in mind. There are so many books in this area. So, I mean, I've always talked about, when this topic comes up, Sean, a book called Let's Talk About Body Boundaries, Consent and Respect. It's by Janine Sanders. I think it's a really good book. It covers all of this. And it's using all kinds of scenarios about consent, including just playing on the playground, you know, not pushing somebody, things like that. So it isn't all sexual in content, is what I mean. It's the topic in general. There's another book by Louise Spilsbury called It's My Body. It's a book about body privacy, basically. And that is more suited to small, younger children, as is a book by Elaine Tai, T-A-I. And it's Yes Means Yes, it's a kid's book about consent, consent boundaries and listening to your body. So there's a number of books. Again, though, as I always say, I would not be going ordering loads of books. I would go to your local library. Your librarians are an immense community resource. ask them, what do they think is a great book? What gets a lot of borrow time? Have a look at the section, read a few of them, because really what you're doing with any books for a three-year-old is you're using the framework of the book to shape and inform how you're going to speak about it to your child. You're not just going to leave a book and say, I've left a little something there for you to read now. You know, so really explore and go, well, that is that something that I could now integrate into my own narrative and speak about this at home? Do a bit of research, but I would always say to people, go to the library first.
Yeah, it's because as you say, it's a kind of a new, because at that age when they're only toddlers, they're wonderfully unself-conscious.
And completely.
And you can't really tell them that's a bad thing.
Oh, no, and it's not a bad thing. And that's exactly it, though. So, but it's, they're never too young to start a conversation about boundaries and keeping them, their body safe, you know, and that everybody's body is their own and that, you know, that nobody can touch your body and nobody, there's no secrets about bodies. It's never too young to start those conversations. But how you have those conversations with a 2 and 3 year old is very different to how you have that conversation with an 8 and 9 year old. That said, the 8 and 9 year old conversation is immensely more straightforward when you've already begun it at 2 and 3.
Yeah, indeed. I remember years ago picking up one of mine from the creche she was in at the time. And it was a lovely creche and had a big playground and, you know, it was really great. And when I went to pick her up, they were showing new prospective parents around and they were saying, we have this, we have that. And just as whoever was showing, they were being shown around, this little like toddler wanders into the middle of the room with his pants around his knees saying, will someone wipe my bum?
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what children do. I think it speaks as well, Sean, though, to how comfortable that child is in his childcare setting. And he's so proud to say, look at me, I'm not wearing nappies anymore. And he wants that, he's expecting, you're going to praise me because you're like my parents. So I think it actually speaks to him being immensely comfortable. And you want that to be, you just want him to know, because it does, like the age when it's cute to do that, Sean, the situation you said, and the age when it's inappropriate to do that, that can happen in the blink of an eye. So you just want to get him knowing that it's about boundaries. So you're starting a conversation and it starts really simply, if I'm honest with you, like with a small child. It's even things like, oh, can I have a bite of your cookie? Oh, thank you for sharing with me. But you ask first, you just don't take it. And if somebody hits your foot, you're saying with a truck or a dinosaur and you're saying, oh, please don't hit my foot. I don't like how that feels on my body. You can get it in little soft ways. It doesn't have to be, oh my God, pull up a chair. Here we go. This is a massive chat now. You're just getting the language in and becoming very comfortable and familiar with it. And then you're growing it from there.
Lots to do. Give me the sunshine. Give me a do. Give me something simple and true. All I need is sunshine and a cool, refreshing mountain dew. So give me my good friends. Give me a do.
Grab some friends and an ice cold Mountain Dew today.
Mountain Dew.
My 15-year-old daughter has overwhelming social anxiety. She's at the point where she won't engage with anyone in her peer group or with siblings outside the front door. When her older sister, 16, drops friends into the house, she will remove herself from the sitting room so she doesn't have to talk to them. Despite this, she's full of chat and even entertaining with us at home, so that is not the problem. However, when it comes to being with social with groups at her own age, it's an absolute no from her. She gets quite cross with us if we try to push or encourage her to do more with others. We're worried about her missing out on making friendships with kids her own age. She was quite outgoing until she turned 13 and started to refuse going to gymnastics and other after-school activities. She did have two very close friends, but fell out with one and won't discuss reconciling, and the other moved out of the country. These things all coincided, but the anxiety and issue around social interaction has been getting progressively worse.
Oh, I mean, God, I really feel for this kid. And it just shows, you know, Sean, there is social capacity there, because when home is just family and just themselves, and in other words, a really safe, controlled space where she can anticipate with certainty that she can really be herself without judgment, she can be herself. And that's a huge weight to be carrying around if you haven't got that sense in your peer group. I'm really struck by the two points in this, that when she turned 13, which is, of course, that transition into early adolescence, when so much is changing emotionally, psychologically, but of course, biologically and physiologically as well, that everything is changing. And that might have been not the cause, but that kind of little snap point where it's like, oh, I don't like this. I don't know myself anymore, how I'm thinking or feeling. Everything is feeling uncertain and confusing and not coping with that. And also the falling out, having two close friends. So actually, even when things were social, like she had a very small little social group, two friends, fell out with one, no discussion about reconciling. And I find that interesting because, like, falling out with our friends is part of growing up, isn't it? You know, we're so aligned on everything, and then they'll do or say something and we're hurt, or we do or say something and our friend is hurt. It's really important that we know that when those ruptures happen in friendships or relationships, that we know how to repair them, how to say, I miss you. I'm sorry that happened. I don't even remember why we were fighting, but I just know I'd like to hang out with you again. And if it was something bigger than that, and it was one of those kind of red line issues where, no, I never want to speak to that person again, we're not aligned, something terrible was said, it would be important that she's able to express that so that she's not holding on to it. Now, she also, as well as social anxiety here, because she's not giving a lot, there is a bit of that self-holding child going on, that it's not that they don't experience the difficulties, it's that they hold on to them. And by the time you know it's there, it's probably been there for quite a while. And a self-holding child is really somebody who could do with a bit of support around that. And this is what this parent is clearly trying to do, the efforts, the trying, the encouraging. Don't push her to socialize. And encouraging and pushing, very fine line.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. You know, you can get curious and you can wonder, would you like to go out and do something? Is there anyone you'd like to invite over to the house? And if the answer is no, that's the answer. Don't go, go on. Sure, surely there's someone. Will I call someone for you? Don't do any of that. I am wondering if this teenager would agree to go to therapy, though, all of that said, because this is quite, you know, a significant degree of social anxiety at an age when friendships are crucial. Like, they're crucial in teenage years, just so that they can develop emotional regulation, reformulate their identity, you know, strengthen and enhance social skills, and that scaffolding of esteem. All of that is done through friendship. So teens really need to have that sense of connection and belonging outside of their family. Having it inside the family, great, like great. But they also need it outside of the family, because their world is supposed to be getting bigger than us. So I'm wondering about that stuff in terms of, does she have activities outside of school? Like, is she involved in like anything at all that puts her in touch with a group of pals, something like, be it scouts or guides or, you know, a team sport or drama or anything like that? I'm kind of guessing no, because she dropped the gymnastics and other activities at that stage at 13. And I'm just not picking up here that she picked anything up since. So her world is quite small. And that's the bit that would worry me for her. And, you know, she's going to school for you. She seems to be doing okay otherwise. But this is a big part of her life. I would strongly encourage consulting with a child adolescent psychotherapist or an adolescent psychologist, even if, as a parent, you were to go with her initially. Because I'm just thinking, if I was seeing somebody presenting with social anxiety and I'm a total stranger and the demand is, come into this room and we'll close the door and you'll sit with me alone, and I'm the only one looking at you, and I think that would be a lot. And so if it was, would you be more comfortable if your mom or dad came in with you for the first session, maybe even two or three sessions? I think that's the way to go. Yeah. Sometimes you going with them gets them in the door. Then it's the job of the therapist to build up that relationship and a sense of safety so that it's possible for her to stay.
Yeah. The longer you leave it, does it become more difficult?
I think so, because don't we all form habits?
Yeah.
And now the thing with habits is you can change a habit, you can form an, if you could form one habit, you can form another habit. But we do get kind of used to this is the way that things are. And everyone wants to be comfortable. So if you're like, no, it's uncomfortable to push myself out of this little comfort zone I've created for myself. It's comfortable to stay in it. Of course, her choice is going to be to stay in it. The longer she does that, the risk, Sean, is her other, her peers, they're moving forwards.
Mm.
They've got each other. They're having experiences. They're going out and doing things, taking risk-taking behavior. And that doesn't always have to be a bad thing. It's often a good thing. And experiences that she's not an active part of. So it, the longer she stays out of those peer connections, the harder it is to just slot back in because she hasn't moved in line with them moving.
My four-year-old son has started to use swear words. Honestly, he has probably picked them up from one or both of us. We try not to use bad words around the house, of course, but let that slip on the very odd occasion and always acknowledge when we do say a word we shouldn't. He has witnessed both of us admonish the other using a word we shouldn't too, but we hold our hands up. Recently, we were in traffic and he mimicked his father saying, ah, for F's sake. And if he drops something, he has started using another expletive, which is the S word. That definitely comes from me. I promise our swearing is minimal, but he picked it up all the same. The first time he did, we were in company and they laughed. We tried not to, but the reaction was there. We've asked him to stop saying it's rude and we have been so much more mindful of our own language, but he thinks it's funny and keeps swearing and often in front of my friends, which is embarrassing. And recently the teacher in his play school raised it. What should we do?
Oh, it's bigger than you guys now, the priest, because what'll happen is other preschoolers are going to go home and repeat those words because that's what happens. You know, children this age are exploring language and language is a very playful, sensuous experience for them. They often will repeat words simply because they like the way they feel in their mouth. They like the shape and sound of them. They like the sensation of them. And, you know, of course, often the first time a child swears, if not most of the time, is, as this parent has acknowledged, I definitely don't, there's a lot of self-admonishing going on in this, but it's often because they're mirroring a word that they've heard from other people. Mm. And then they repeat it based on the reaction that they get. And everybody listening now knows that when a small child swears for the first time, it's quite difficult not to laugh because it sounds strange coming out of a child's mouth. Because the reality is some words adults use are not okay for children to use. I'm almost reassuring this parent and saying that, to be honest, because they're making such an effort with their own language. I am going to advise that while he's witnessed you, what you say, witness both of us admonish the other, I'd play that down a bit now. I wouldn't make such a big saga about, oh, you said a bad word, because there's quite a bit of drama about that. And what you're really showing him is, ooh, that word has power.
Mm.
That word is quite a big deal. That word gets everybody a bit antsy and on edge. Let me try that out. I would just, you can give each other a look, of course. You know, you can do that, but you don't make a big thing out of it. I'm wondering if he's swearing now that he's swearing. I wonder, is he doing it for attention, like to elicit laughter, to do something like that? Or is it context specific? Is it when he's frustrated and angry? Is he using these words in context? There's nothing here that really kind of says that, but just put that in your mind and hold on to it. There's a few things that I would say. While it is okay that there are words that some words adults say that children don't, hold in mind that he's four. So any rules that you create at home about swearing for him at this age, they're less confusing to him if they also apply to the adults doing the same behavior.
Yeah.
Just put that in your head. Like that, you know, when he's dropping something and he's saying something like the S word, you could just get very serious. Oh no, you can't say that word. That's a rude word for poo. Don't say that again. And move on, because he doesn't know what that word means.
Mm.
He just knows it has an effect. So sometimes giving them a little bit of meaning and saying, oh no, 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 we don't do that. And move on like that. Under 4 years old, a child swearing, I would say use your gentle yet firm, serious voice. It's not a nice word. We don't say it, and redirect them and move on. Because they don't get it. And you're going to repeat that over and over. Preschoolers, though, which this little guy is, they won't understand the meaning of the word. So that's why I think with some context, not all of the words, explain something around why it's not nice. And then if it persists, you might, like if it lingers, you might need to bring in a small cause and effect, because he's capable of that now. just a cause and effect correction. Like, no, don't say that word. If I hear that word out of your mouth today, there's no TV today. And then be consistent. You're not giving out, you're saying it in that tone of voice, but your tone of voice, your facial expression should all convey, I'm not amused, this is serious, it's not allowed. You don't have to yell or snap, but you're just saying, there is no TV when I hear those words. And give him a chance to correct.
If he's already going to play school, though, and doing a bit of swearing here and there, and like if he's getting audiences for it and getting reactions for it outside, you know, the orbit of his parents, that might he keep doing it? Might he just learn not to do it at home?
No, not really, because four-year-olds are like, it's a bit why they find it difficult to eat in restaurants if they're allowed to walk around home holding their toast in one hand and a truck in the other, because it's actually hard for them to hold two conflicting sets of rules in mind about the same thing. So, no, and I imagine it would be worth, by the way, asking the preschool teacher what they say when he, what they say and do when he does these words, just so you can be consistent. But there's no way they're laughing off in preschool. They're going to catch it. Nope, we don't say it. And they're going to move on because they can't afford the other kids to start saying it, because that's just creating a nightmare for them to manage. So he's at home, you can turn it around. If you come on, you just have to be consistent, calm, clear, consistent. Don't yell, don't get dramatic, don't overreact, but respond in a very consistent way to him and persevere with that. You can turn it around at home. If it's not okay at home, it's not okay outside.
Yeah, indeed. I wonder, are they bumping into other parents from the play school who are saying, you know what, little Johnny came home swearing last night. And the parents are going, I don't know where he got that from.
Navel gazing. Oh my gosh, not me, not my kid. No, absolutely. And the other thing is though, Sean, like, a lot of kids, if like a majority of kids are going to say a swear word.
Like,
it's that playfulness with language. So we do, you know, they're not, you know, we're not raising little sailors here who are out there rough and tumble the way they're talking. They're literally exploring language. So give him other words to play with, you know, let him learn. Like, it sounds like he's a curious little guy with language. Give him new words, you know, that he can say fiddlesticks. You know, little playful words that are fun to say.
Yeah. Though one of our listeners, Jill, says, it's funny how children can hear a curse word only once to repeat it, but it takes years for them to say please and thank you.
So true. The reaction is different, Jill. That's why.
They should start and thank you. Repeating it then. Joanna, thanks a million as ever.
Thanks, Sean.
Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.